Are you ready to go into space? Yeah, it's an option now. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More, where each episode brings you a new story about people, inventions, pop culture, and life. I am Russ, and this week we are talking about space tourism. So I'm joined today by Wendy Whitman Cobb, and she is a professor of strategy and security studies at the U.S. Air Force School of Advanced Air and Space Studies. Wow, just saying that title, Wendy, that might take up the whole podcast. Thank you for joining me today.
That's why we usually use the acronym of SAS. So
now you tell me. Okay, so as a space policy expert, you know about space exploration and space tourism now. Okay, so the other day I was talking with my wife and kids about, you know, essentially saying that someday they may be taking their vacations not to Disneyland, but to space. So, okay, for those that have never heard about space tourism or exactly what this is, let's start with the basics here. Tell us, what is space tourism?
Yeah, so at the very basic, it's paying to go into space, much like you would pay to go to Disneyland or Disney World. You're buying a ticket. There's a couple different ways you can kind of get there. There's the orbital shot, so just like is what SpaceX is doing right now, where you get on a rocket and you go up and you orbit the Earth. Obviously, that's a lot more technologically difficult, a lot more expensive. But some of the other companies like Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic are doing what's called suborbital shots. So you don't get as high enough and fast enough to actually get into space, but you go just high enough so there you're actually on the very lower reaches of space and you're up there for about 5 to 6 minutes. You experience weightlessness. And then you come right back down to Earth.
Yeah, so I was looking up that Blue Origin. They've got a depending on when you're listening to this podcast, they're doing a raffle. They've done like 15 flights. They've all been successful, so that's good. You're in space for about 11 minutes. They're projecting the cost to be about $200,000. So this seems like right now, even though with the reusable rockets and things like that, this seems like it's going to be something for people with a lot of money, right?
Yeah, it's not going to be cheap. And in fact, it might even, I've seen some speculation that Blue Origin might go up as high as $500,000 at first. Wow. Virgin Galactic might be somewhere around $250,000. We don't know yet because they actually haven't announced their specific prices. So Blue Origin, they're actually having this bidding competition for their first seat. Which is really going to be interesting because it lets people set the price. So I actually think it'll be an interesting indicator of how much people might be willing to pay for that. So I actually kind of wonder if they're not doing that as sort of a business test to find out where it's the upper limit of what people are willing to pay. Because really what these companies, particularly Blue Origin and SpaceX, want to do is get people used to the idea that going to space is a normal, everyday, routine thing like going to Disney. Because that's sort of their future plans are sort of predicated on the general public accepting this idea and seeing it as routine, reliable, and safe.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is very important. Now, we've got three different companies going after this, and really, we've got three different billionaires. And it's sort of like a new space race that we're dealing with. So you've got, you know, Branson and Bezos and Musk all competing to be the space tourism, space exploration company. What is their motivation? Is it just pure profit? What's behind their decision to get into this business?
So I think Branson's a different case than Bezos and Musk. But for Bezos and Musk, they have this very internal, intrinsic motivation. Musk obviously fears that we're going to screw up Earth somehow. And so in order to save humanity, we need to be this sort of multi-planetary species. So his ultimate goal is to get to Mars. So it's sort of the step-by-step process right now where he's got the rockets that can go into Earth orbit. And we're working on the ones that can get to the moon and get to Mars. So that's for him. He's looking to save humanity, whether it's from saving us from gas and providing electric cars or getting us to Mars so that we're a multi-planetary species. For Jeff Bezos is really interesting because when he was in college, he was influenced by one of his professors, Gerard O'Neill, who had this book called The High Frontier. And in it, he imagined these large colonies out in Earth orbit, so out in space, not necessarily on a planet, but by moving a lot of heavy industry off Earth into space, moving a lot of people into these space colonies, that you could then save Earth and is sort of treated as a national park or an international park. So both of them are really sort of motivated by this desire to save Earth, save humanity, really, but have different ways of going about doing that. For Branson, I think he's very much the adventurer.
Yeah.
His whole career, his whole history is all about the adventure. So right. I think it's your adventure that's sort of motivating him.
You know, so with the motivation of saving the planet, if we're sending rockets up all the time, isn't that causing pollution? I mean, we see all the, you know, the smoke coming out of the rockets and all of that. Are we, in a way, is this counterintuitive? Are we actually hurting the planet by looking for another planet to live on?
I won't say I'm an expert in the science because I'm a political scientist after all. But a lot of times when you see these big billowy clouds of smoke, they're not smoke, it's not gas, it's not emissions, it's actually water vapor. That is the product of the fuels that they're using. The fuels that they combine, they go into the combustion chambers, they fuel the engines, and it's actually water vapor. So in terms of, you know, if we're thinking about emissions on the types of level of cars, it's not really contributing anything. Now, if we want to talk in terms of heavy metals, rare earth metals that might be used up, you know, that's sort of a different thing. Another concern is sort of, are you doing any damage to the atmosphere, the upper reaches of the atmosphere, by continually puncturing through it? I don't know. I'm not that sort of scientist, but that is certainly a concern that you're sort of ruining Earth in doing this. Yeah, I still think it's pretty cool.
I totally think it's cool.
That makes me a polluter. So be it.
No, you know, I think that, I mean, all of this over the last few years, it's been so exciting to see sort of this space race. Because, you know, so on another podcast that I have, I talk about the historical events, and many of those are, you know, back in the 60s, kind of during that first space race. You know, the Russians got Yuri up there, and a month or so later, now the United States is up there. And there was all this back and forth about getting to the moon first and all of that. And it's like we have that now with Mars. And how cool is that, right? Like, what an exciting time to live.
It's awesome. I grew up in Florida, so I got to live my childhood seeing space shuttles go up.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it was really cool. And once I got old enough and to be able to drive, I would, you know, drive over to Kennedy and actually be able to see them in person. So like, I got to experience that really kind of very up close and personal. So to be able to watch SpaceX today, like, I do not miss a test shot. Like, I am that live stream watching it. And it is really exciting to somebody who got to see that. And I want other people to be able to see that and experience that and understand the excitement and the enthusiasm that brings. That's really a cool part of it to me. And I think it's really important from the political end of it, too, that we have a public that is supportive of those types of efforts, because unfortunately, the public isn't very supportive of major space exploration efforts on the part of the United States government in particular. So I think there's kind of also this hope that this space race amongst the billionaires is also helpful in terms of spurring national development and national efforts in terms of space exploration.
So why, we'll make our case in case we have somebody that is listening that is kind of not for space exploration. Why should we do this?
So the biggest criticism that I ever hear about space exploration is, you're spending this money up in space, you're throwing it away. What good is that doing you? In reality, all of that money is being spent here on Earth. So think about just like NASA. A lot of their big centers are located in the South, in states that are used to be, at least, not very economically developed. So Florida, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas. And so particularly like in the space race and even through today, these sorts of efforts, these high-tech, expensive efforts that attract highly qualified, highly educated people, are economic development projects for those areas. So you're not spending any of this money on the ground or in space. You're spending it on the ground in areas that could use that sort of economic development and economic assistance. In addition to that, we get a ton of spinoffs from space exploration technology. Think about Apollo. The Apollo program contributed to miniaturization of electronics because we had to get them small enough and light enough to get on that. So all of these spinoffs that we get, think about GPS. That's a space system that we use every day. And it's not just getting you from place to place. Also, these super precise timing signals that all financial transactions are sort of measured against. That's how we time them. So a lot of these space systems actually underlie our entire global economy. So space exploration and doing all these technological development things are good for economic reasons. We know more, we make more, we're better people for it. And I think there is this sort of innate drive to explore and understand and learn that I think that feeds at least.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is, I feel like space tourism could sort of supplement some of that, because it caught, I read somewhere, I believe it was like $4 billion a year on the International Space Station. That's how much we're spending. But if we can get a, you know, $2 million for somebody to go hang out there for a week, well, cool, let's take it, right? I mean, it seems like that would make sense as well.
Yeah, it's not going to offset the overall cost, but it definitely brings you attention, brings a little bit of added subsidy to it. And it's just exciting to sort of see that and to be able to live vicariously through it. So, I mean, it's never going to be cheap. It's cheaper than it used to be.
Right.
In the era of the space shuttle, it used to be at least $18,000 a kilogram to get something into space. Jeez. And with SpaceX now, it's like well under $1,500 per kilogram. So it's way less expensive than it used to be. It's never going to be cheap, but we're getting there. There's been progress made just within the past 10 years on that.
Oh, well, there's been a ton of progress on the price, and also the fact that you don't ever like to like go to Russia to do this. You used to have to go to Russia to go into space. They wouldn't do it here in the United States. And now you can. And I believe the first one was back in 2001. It cost about $2 million. Wow. Okay. There's been maybe 12 or so people that have done space tourism. And now it looks like perhaps this is going to pick up. When do we see this picking up? When will it start?
I'm hoping this year. Blue Origin, at least, maybe not to the International Space Station, but at least suborbitally this year, Origin's going to start. SpaceX has their first tourist shot in September. They won't be going to the International Space Station, but their second one next year, organized by Axiom Space, will be going to the International Space Station. So I think this is the time where we're going to start seeing more and more of this. The question obviously is going to be, can you continue to demonstrate that this is a safe thing to do?
That's exactly where we need to go when we talk about this. Cause I think one of the things where people get a little scared, okay, well, you got the money, obviously, like that could prevent people from going and doing this. But then there's the safety issue. We'll take a short break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the safety of space tourism. We'll be right back. And welcome back, and thank you for listening to Learning More. I'm Russ. We're talking about space tourism, and my guest today is Wendy Whitman Cobb. She is a space policy expert. We touched on the cost and the motivation of these billionaires to get into space and start a little bit more space tourism. We've had some. We haven't had a lot yet, but it looks like this is about to happen. Now, one of the big concerns, of course, is safety. Okay, us Gen Xers, we know the Challenger disaster. I remember sitting in my elementary school classroom. The TV was rolled into the classroom and we're watching it happen live. And a teacher was going to go into space, Krista McAuliffe. And of course, we know what happened that day. The Challenger exploded and there was the big investigation. And then later on, there was in 2003, the Columbia disaster. Both of these are still fresh in my mind. It's like they happened yesterday. I remember these moments happening. So it would be difficult for me to get onto a rocket and be blasted into space when these are the things that I remember. How are we going to get past all of these safety concerns that people will have about space travel?
It's tough. I mean, for me, you know, I lived in Orlando at the time of Columbia in 2003, and I actually worked at Disney World at the time. And when the space shuttles came in to land at Kennedy, they would fly over the peninsula and you would hear the sonic booms. There'd be these twin sonic booms. And I remember working that Saturday morning at Disney, knowing the shuttle was coming in, but never hearing the booms. Mm. And I remember that feeling, that sinking feeling, yeah. That, something's wrong. And so, I totally understand the safety concerns, and I think they're valid. Aviation had a similar issue when it was just going in the 1920s. Barnstorming brought a lot of attention to aviation, but it was also incredibly dangerous, and people died all the time doing it. And so people were actually afraid to fly. They were excited. It was cool, but they were very afraid. And what it took was a concerted effort on the part of the government to really come in and set safety standards. There has been some of that done already through the FAA in terms of how to regulate launches, how to regulate spaceflight. They have taken a little bit of a lighter hand in terms of passengers on these things, because the fear is that by over-regulating it, then you tamp down on any potential development that could be there. Mm. So right now, the government's sort of in this place where they're trying to balance enough regulation, particularly in terms of safety for human participants, versus over-regulation and stifling an industry before it even gets started. Now, that all being said, these companies don't want to start sending people into space and have people die. It's a terrible business case. So they're incredibly invested in the safety in demonstrating that. So I don't think they are taking a cavalier approach to it whatsoever. Blue Origin has had a very concerted testing program. Like you said, it's the new Shepard rocket. It's been well over 15 times, haven't had a problem. SpaceX has now launched three crews to the International Space Station with nary an issue, at least as far as we know. I haven't heard anything. I don't think there were any problems.
Seems good.
It was as smooth as could be. And so I think they have, even though the federal government hasn't stepped in actively to really kind of be a little bit more proactive in it, I don't think these companies are lax whatsoever, because the minute that you do have something go wrong, your entire business case falls apart. Mm-hmm. So I do think that they are taking extra special care. Virgin Galactic, they've been saying for well over a decade now, it's right around the corner, it's right around the corner. And they haven't started with paying passengers yet either. So I think all three of these companies killing passengers is a bad idea. Right. So I don't think they'll do it before they're absolutely ready to do it.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen that on the part of all three of them. So I'm not all that concerned by safety. In SpaceX's case, actually, the Crew Dragon in many ways is safer than the space shuttle. The space shuttle on launch, if something went wrong, like in Challenger, there was no emergency ejection system. Like, you had to ride that out. With SpaceX on the Crew Dragon, they actually can separate themselves from the rocket in the case of emergency. So there's actually, I think, a little bit more safety built into SpaceX's system than even the space shuttle had.
Oh, wow. You know, I actually saw, I got sucked into the Blue Origin and the New Shepard rocket and kind of checking that out. At any point in the 11-minute, mission going, they've got a backup plan for everything.
And you can't just like show up and get on it one day. All the companies are offering rigorous training for their participants before they even go up. So for Blue Origin, you go out there 3-4 days ahead of time. They put you through a couple days of training before you even go up on that. It'll be a similar thing for Virgin Galactic. For SpaceX's crews, it's a couple months of training. So you're not just going to, like a ride at Disney World, you're not just going to walk up, get on, and have it be done. There is a significant amount of effort that you have to put into it if you want to do it.
Gotcha. So not only do you have to invest the money, but you got to invest some time to get up there and make all this happen. So, okay, I I've been wondering this the entire time. Would you do it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My husband and I were actually just talking about this the other night, and we're like, we could do it. We could put the money away for a few years. You know, obviously, we don't have the millions to go on a SpaceX trip. But even, SpaceX had the drawing, the raffle for the Inspiration 4 seat. They were raffling off one of the seats on their Inspiration 4 mission. I entered. I put my money in. I told my boss, I'm like, it's professional development if I win, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You want a space expert who's been to space ostensibly. So, absolutely. I would go on heartbeat.
Nice. And okay. So when do you think, okay, we've got, you know, we haven't been back to the moon really in quite some time here. When do you think, you know, we're going to start to be able to do trips like that? Like, do you think that's in our near future here? What should I tell my kids?
You know, knowing the history of space exploration as I do, it's somewhat dispiriting because since the 1960s, we said, oh, Mars is right around the corner. Oh, we're going to get back to the moon. And yet we're still, you know, here 50, almost 60 years later and still not back to the moon. Mm-hmm. So as optimistic as I want to be, history kind of pulls me back a little bit. It's not as easy to do. I think it's easier now that we have commercial alternatives. Space used to be so expensive that only state governments could do it. That's not the case anymore. So I think things are moving in the direction where I'm hopeful that in my lifetime, Mars will be in the picture. I think NASA has undertaken a really good effort to get back to the moon within the next 5 to 6 years. I know the goal was 2024. That probably won't happen. But I do think it's within about the next 5 years. If Elon Musk and SpaceX can get their Starship program to work, I think Mars is legitimately about a decade out. So I think this is closer than it's ever been. But then again, we've been saying that since the 1960s. And so I tend to pull back a little bit just seeing the lessons of history there.
Gotcha. Now, okay. So you mentioned that you worked for Disney World. How long before there's a Disney World up in a Disney Mars? I'm sure Disney would do something like that where they'd throw it out there. Disney Mars. Okay. Well, the thing is right now, though, you know, we do have this kind of track to get up to Mars, hopefully. And as you mentioned, maybe it's in the next decade. Something that Elon Musk said not too long ago was there's going to be people that die going to Mars. Is going to Mars a one-way ticket as you see it?
It's quite possible. Space is hard and it's dangerous and it's not where humans are most suited to live. There's radiation, right? You're going to get an incredible amount of radiation that you wouldn't otherwise. And so who knows what the long-term effects of that are. A million and one things could go wrong between here and there. We've all seen The Martian with Matt Damon. Yeah. Things go wrong. It's going to happen. I do think that's an unfortunate reality. I have to hope that that doesn't put a damper on these sorts of plans. You got to kind of, I think, put it in some historical context when you think about the number of people who died on the Oregon Trail. Right. It wasn't just us Gen Xers playing the Oregon Trail video game in the 80s and 90s. Real people died on the Oregon Trail. I mean, anything that is this worthwhile is going to have people, you know, suffer. And I hope that that isn't what keeps us from doing something as exciting as that.
And you've got some great articles on The Conversation, and I'll put links to those articles so that people can go check those out and learn a little more from what you've written on The Conversation. Thank you so much for joining me today, Wendy.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And you know what? We got to say too that everything, you know, it's your views, not the Department of Defense views, right?
Yes, it's all mine. Even though I work for the Department of Defense, the views are my own and are not necessarily representative of the DOD or any of its affiliates.
All right. It sounds like you read that off a card.
No, I just said it enough. I've memorized it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now I've got to say the same thing for my podcast. See, it's how these things go. All right. Well, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And thank you for listening to Learning More. Each week, we will bring you a new episode. We've got some fantastic episodes coming up. Oh, man. Yeah. Pandemic dating. What is that like? What is the status of online dating and what is going on? And what's with all those big fish pictures? We'll tell you about all of that. We also have an episode coming up about the mRNA vaccine and how mRNA is becoming kind of a household name. But what does it exactly mean and what can it do for us in the future? Another episode that we have coming up is about happiness. And what age are you the happiest? We're going to find out. That is all coming up on Learning More. We also invite you to listen to our daily podcast, This Is Today, where you can find out the exciting and fun events that have happened on each day in history. That is available at thisistodaypodcast.com. There is a link in the description. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing, and we will talk to you next time.